Accession number 16715, John Jarvis, Reel 1.
Mr. Jarvis, Reel 1. When and where were you born, Mr. Jarvis?
I was born at Spennymoor on the 18th of November, 1919. I lived at Spennymoor for 5 years. And after that, we moved to West Auckland. My father got a job in the local brewery. He was foreman of the local brewery. So we moved from Spennymoor to West Auckland. I was at West Auckland from the age of 5.
Was it a good job your father had?
Yeah, he was foreman of the brewery. He was in charge of the brewery sort of style, you know. He used to do the fermenting of the beer and the lemonade and things like that. And it was quite a big operation at that time. A local operation, but it was quite big, yeah. Previously, he'd been a fisherman and he'd been hurt at sea. He come from a fishing family, but it was originated from Scarborough. And he came up the northeast to take a post office at first at Jarrah. And then after that, he left Jarrah to go to Spennymoor in the bottling trade, you know, the beer and lemonade. And he left that at Spennymoor and came to West Auckland. Yeah, it was a rougher locality at West Auckland to Spennymoor. It was a different locality. And I was five years old when I came. We came to live at West Auckland.
Had you any brothers and sisters?
Oh, aye. Yeah, we're quite a large family. The oldest, the brother and sister, we left at Spennymoor because they were getting married, or, you know, some on the verge of getting married. And I had 1, 2, 3 sisters and 2 brothers at West Auckland. So we had quite a large family, 78, you know, in the family. And, you know, we were quite decent enough, like, as far as money goes and food and that, and a lot of the people in the locality was poor at the time. You know, it was a time of where if you didn't work in the pit, you probably hadn't a job, and you were on the dole and pretty hard living, very hard times them, I reckon, you know, just at 19.
Did your mother work?
No. Although them days it was a mother had a full-time job looking after families and that. They didn't work partly to the wartime, you know, the women. Neither did they go for the drink, you know. If you, in the public and saw a woman, it was a shame, you know. She was the top of the town. No, partly no women worked them days. She had a full-time job bringing up the family. And she died pretty young. She died in childbirth with my youngest brother. I was 10 years old when my mother died. And she died having my brother, who lives at the Eccliffe or somewhere around there.
Did your father remarry?
No. He was quite a bit older than my mother. No. And he was, when she died, that was it. He, you know, he was quite a bit older than my mother. No, what? He didn't remarry. He just kept on working the brewery till he retired, you know.
The house you lived in, what was that like?
It wasn't so good. I think we were... We were betrayed a bit by the people that owned the brewery, you know. He promised to get us a house at this time. When we come, he'd get us a house, but in reality, it was really too small for us. We should have had a bigger house and in better situation. But he was that keen to get the job, and I think he just took it, thinking like once he got settled down, he maybe get a different house. No, the house wasn't comparable to the job, I'll put it that way. It was really... It was a tough locality. I would say it was one of the toughest streets in West Auckland. West Auckland being a little mining village, but it was a real tough street. Everybody that lived in that street were real, you know, that you fight for a living sort of style. It was a real hard going for a lot of them families. I do admit that.
Your home, what were the sleeping arrangements?
We were very poor, I tell you. In my opinion, we were betrayed. We left the house, we had about 3 bedrooms, and come there with 2 little bits of bedrooms, you know, and we had a very, very poor, you know. It was one of them houses where, to get everybody in, you had to put them there, you had a bed like that, like a divan bed, where you unfolded it out. And then on the morning when you got up, you folded it back up again. And what they had one of them downstairs there, so we wouldn't have managed at all. It was really cramped, very cramped. For the type of job that he did, and he was a real very good servant to West Harton Brodie, he was very badly treated, in my opinion. That's my, in hindsight, I can say that, you know.
What were the facilities of the house? Did you have electricity?
Why, I can remember when we first moved, you know, we had the lamp, the old-fashioned paraffin lamps, you know. And you got your paraffin every week off the bloke that come round with the arson card. And we used to get our lamp. But after that, we got electric in. I believe I'd be about 12 or so when we got electric in. Then, of course, everybody started getting radios and bits of electrical equipment, you know. There was no televisions, like, in our area then. We started getting radios. And, you know, everybody had a bit of a... sorry, a bit of a wireless, you know, radiograms and things like that. They all come into, you know, popularity. But I'll be getting on, yeah. I must have been, like, you know, 12 or 13 when we got electrical equipment in.
You say that your money, you weren't too badly off. You were reasonably well off in that sense.
Yes.
You weren't short of money. Food, were you well fed?
Well, that's it. Say, we were seven, like in them days, practically everybody had a family of five, sixes and sevens, you know, around that way. And we were well fed in the respect that we got a lot of decent food, you know, like a lot of good, like, you know, stews, and we got a lot of fried stuff, ham and eggs and tinned tomatoes, you know, tinned beans, whatever that was going at the time. But when you have a family of seven to feed, you've got to make a big pan of stew because it's economical, you know, and even now, this day, the wife makes me a pan every Tuesday. What we used to call Katie Ash, you know, potatoes and every veg you can imagine in, you know, and little chunks of meat cut up in little chunks, and that pan of Katie Ash used to just go down like that, you know, when you get about six people sitting down, I did you want some, and of course at that period everybody baked their own bread, and which was very filling, you know, they would bake maybe a stone of flour and put in tins around the fire to rise, you know. And put in the coal ovens them days, you know. Put a couple of bits of hot coal underneath the oven and it would bake, and it used to be lovely. To us in them days, it to use the old-fashioned word, it was manna. We used to enjoy it that much, it used to be terrific. I can still enjoy it. In them days, you know, we used to get what they call the stocky cake now. They used to, any paste that was left, they used to just put in the cake and toss it in the oven. And when he came out, he used to be fighting for it. You know, it was really, especially if you had something like fried tomatoes or things like that, where you could dip your bread in, you know, and very filling. And them days, we had to have filling food, you know, substantial food. We couldn't go in for these fancy things that we go in for now, you know, there was no pizzas and things like that. It was all straightforward, fancy food. It was all the frying pan or the tatey ash or the big pan. And on a Sunday, of course, on a Sunday you got your Yorkshire puddings. I think they must have gotten sick of making Yorkshire puddings, so when you reckon it up.
Many families were food was supplemented through gardens or allotments. Did your father get involved with that?
Yes. Although when we first got it, we were very green, and one of the local men showed us. Later I worked at the pit with him. He was a grand old, but he was a very, very good gardener. And he showed us out at Lyo Garden out. For the first couple of years, you know. And yes, we had the West Harton Brodie, back of the Brodie, there was an allotment scheme, you know, right at the back of the Brodie with a big wall around. It's still there. There's no allotments there, but the place is there. And there was somewhere in the region of 24 allotments there, and they grow everything, you know, leeks and potatoes, turnips and carrots and everything, which was a great help. I mean, that type of food wasn't very dear in them days, you know. You could buy for next to nothing, you know. and people used to utilise practically everything from the garden. There was no waste like there is now. I mean, at one time, I remember when we used to make broth, what we call broth. We used to get the butcher and get a bit of old pork or, and put in to make the gravy. Then you put every sort of lentil in, yet you couldn't get all of splitties and everything. You used to even cut the tops off the Brussels sprouts and chop them up fine and put them in. A big pan, you know, what people call broth. And it was lovely when you were eating it, but you always went to the toilet. You could eat half a gallon, you know. But it used to be lovely, you know, especially cold weather. People used to put the broth pan on and make big pans of broth in there. And them was the days, them was 1920s, you know, 19, just after the strike, 27 and 28, when a lot of the people around this area had nothing coming in, you know, they were really badly off. But I was lucky, my father had a job at the brewery, you know. And as far as food goes, I was very lucky, yeah.
Clothing, was that easy?
Ah, yeah, well, you see, the same applied to clothing. A lot of my mates had, I've known them queuing up for what they call the soap kitchen just around the corner here. They used to get a bowl of soap, and sometimes I once went to school with my mate and he had a pair of new boots on. I asked him where you're getting the boots, and he'd get them off one of these concerns. But I was very lucky that way. I never had to fall in for that type of thing. And I'll tell you the truth, when he had the new boots, he had new stockings on. You know, the lad hadn't, the family hadn't money to buy him a pair of socks. He was really one of these people that was badly off. And he was a great young fella, a nice lad he was, a grand lad. But he was just, his family was unlucky. Then came this scheme where they worked 6 months. I don't know what they call it. They made a new road up there with people on the door that work 6 months, and they give them the minimum wage to work that 6 months, and then they put some more on, you know. But it sort of helped them through with the bad times until the decent times came back again. But I would say around about 1926 up to 30 or 35, there were real bad times around here, I would say. Very bad times, like as far as the money and food and proper food, I mean, and conditions were. It was pretty rough around these areas. Although here, we were the central of the Southwest Durham coal mine area, see? And all the people, they relied on the coal mines for the bringing. A lot of them, when these pits closed down a little bit, a lot of them went down Doncaster and that way. That was in 1930s. They're still there in the families, and a lot of people still go down to visit them even now. And that they go down there, that they get a living, get a family and food and that. And they were the tough times, I think, just 1926 to 35. They were real there. Them 10 years there, they were real tough times.
You mentioned that the people around about were tough, as you say, or uh-huh. hard. Was there a great deal of fighting amongst them, or falling out?
Well, you know, I think the street where I lived, there was more feeling like for neighbours than what there was in any part of my life. They were best neighbours you could wish for, although they were very poor, and at times they maybe envied you a little bit because you had a little bit more than them, but I don't know, but they were grand people to me, they were grand people, and I thought, for neighbours and that was the best time of my life. I've never had neighbours like that since then. Although they were very, very, very poor, and that they watch every halfpenny, they had to watch. They were the best neighbours that I ever had in my life. I still remember them very well, and I still have one or two of them left. So I go up and say, when I get a ride up to the club with one of my sons, I go and have a bit gossip with them, you know, and talk about the old times. And still one or two still left, and not many now, like, there's still about three or four left, I think. Gradually they keep fading away, you know. Like that saying goes, all soldiers never die, they only fade away.
What are the leisure activities that you got into as a child, small child?
Why, we had a local cinema, you know, which changed films about three times a week, and only cost a penny, a tuppence to go. We used to go there many 3 times a week. Apart from that, we had a, you know, in later years, we had a social centre when after I left school, what they call a social centre, where we used to go up and they used to have penny dances, you know, you paid a penny to have a dance to, for the night's dancing, and somebody was playing the piano. Now that's about all we had, we had nothing else. We had no junior football teams, no junior boxing teams or clubs, no junior clubs or nothing. The lad I was mates with, he was a bit of an amateur boxer. In fact, he was amateur, heavyweight amateur in North of England, you know. And for him to train a little bit and get a bit, you know, training, you used to have to go to Witton Park. That was the nearest boys club. And that was 4 or 5 miles up the road. He had to go there to do his training and, you know, get his bouts. And he used to fight for them. And he was one of the best in the Northeast at his weight, you know. Amateur boxing, you know, as a local amateur boxing. And no, there was there was really nothing. You just get a ball and kick it on the green. that's one thing I've always complained about. Like when a man leaves school, we left school at 14. Now from 14 to the age of 18, that's a void. There's 4 years void where there's nothing. I don't know how they do it now, but nowadays we had nothing. We're just waiting at a time when we could start work and have a couple of bob pocket money so we could go on drinking with the men. And most of us started drinking when we were 17 years old. You know, that was the only thing left for us. Yeah, there was nothing else to do, nothing for us to do. And we used to sneak in, you know, and some of the publicans used to turn a blind eye and serve us, you know. And but for that void, that 4 years void, it was you just get a ball out and kick it at the street end, or, you know. There was no clubs and no nothing, no organised recreations of no description, you know.
Was your father a drinking man?
No, he made it, but he didn't drink it. He never drunk it in his life, no. He was a teetotal. He was the farmer, he was the broad, he was top man, he used to make the beer and the lemonade and everything. He was a very good, clever man. But he never drunk it. His allowance, he used to bring home for us to drink. They get allowance so much a day, why he used to convert his beer allowance into lemonade and mineral water, you know, American ice cream, so on, and them fancy drinks. And he used to, on a Saturday morning, he used to get 2 dozen on his back, pint bottles of lemonade and that, and bring them over home. That was his recipe for the week. We used to get them, you know. He never drunk it, no. He had plenty of men like to try his beer out. They used to go in the allowance house and get a couple of pints, but he never drunk himself, no. No.
What was family discipline like in those days?
Why, it was a long way different to what it is now. I think I can safely say that. He had more respect. I think that's the best way to put it. People had more respect for the family, you know. And in most cases, you're more frightened of your father than what you were of the town bully, you know. Because if 9 times out of 10, if you got vexed, he'd clip you on and think nothing about it, you know. And certainly you didn't want that. It was a self-imposed discipline, I would say. Brought about by respect for your parents. Which I'm sorry to say seems to have faded away a lot lately, this last decade or so. But maybe since the war, I don't know. But before the war, we had a lot of respect for our parents. You know, a lot of... And for all the people, we were all taught when we were young, you know, to have respect for all the people. And it stuck right through life, sort of style, you know. But that was before the war. Like, since then, it's altered, and I don't see much of it now, so I might as well tell the truth. I think it's there's no regimentation at all, no discipline or nothing now. I mean, we were disciplined very, very strongly at school when we were young. Our headmaster, I remember him and I'll never forget him. And I'm 75 turned, and when I went to school when I was 13, he gave me such a good hiding that I still remember it. And he was a man who didn't care any hands. He used to say, touch your toes, and when you touch your toes, he used to belt you. You know, he used to give you a belt right across the backside. And he used to jump like a kangaroo, you know. And he didn't stop, he used to give you it. He used to give me some... I know once I run away, I was going to be out the door, and I turned around and I said, I'm going to tell my dad of you. And I says, he'll be up here to see you. And when I got the door, the bleeding thing was looking at each other. I never forget that. And face him. And he was a big 6 foot, powerful fella, you know, and he was a... I suppose at the time it was him that was right and it was me that was wrong, you know. It was a brand new school and we started to violate, you know, it a little bit. We used to swing on the desk and put our feet on the wall and things like that. When he was quite right, we shouldn't have done it, you know, but we thought we were clever them days. And I was the one that got caught, and so he belted us, and he gave me some stick. And that's 60 years ago, and I still remember it.
Which school did you start at?
I started here, this one here, St. Evans School, about 100 yards along the road. I started at St. Evans School when I was 5. I never went to West Staunton School. Excuse me. I went from St. Evans School, you went till you were 11. Then 11, you went to the new school at West Auckland. This is the brand new school it was. It had been open about 2 or 3 years when I went there. And we took even in them days, I did 3 years French. It was a real sort of advanced school, you know, technique. And we had a joiner. I can remember what a teacher, he must have been in the forces, and he was a real brilliant teacher to me, was any rod. For instance, when we were doing geography, you know, He used to sit off and tell you tales about the different countries and make it really bright for you. And he'd been in India and them places, and we used to sit with our mouths open. And all the time he was learning, you know, and he was very, very clever with it. He was very good. And that same teacher, he said one, you know, lovely days like this, we made a theodolite. Bought the different bits of parts, but we had a joiner shop, and we made the legs and the stand and it. And we used to go out in the neighbouring fields. And I used to enjoy that, you know. And we used to have the theodolite, and it was great. I thought that was smashing. And what a good teacher he was. They called him Tommy Coulthard. I didn't call him Tommy, mine, Mr. Coulthard to me, but that was his name, Tommy Coulthard. He was a great fella, a great teacher, I thought. And a really tip-top fella he was. And he had a tough job, you know. Teaching at West Auckland School was a tough job. It was. And we had people come from right round, from Cockfield and Evenwood, and right round to the company that school. It was a new school and had new ideas. And I tell you, we did 3 years French, which later on, I'll tell you later on in life, it became useful to us when I was in Italy. Because all Latin languages, like French and Spanish and Portuguese and Italian, they're all based on the Latin language. And the similarity in the verbs is, you know, it's very much alike. Very, very much alike.
Did your parents encourage you in your school life? In your education?
Not really. Not really. In them days, it was more or less all left to the teachers and that, you know. There was these 11 plus exams and this and that and t'other way. You'd be surprised that lads in them days never tried. Didn't even, I must admit that I didn't, so I might as well tell the truth. And my mate didn't, he passed and he went to the grammar school. I'll tell you about him later. I didn't try yet, but I bet there was 40%, 50% maybe of the lads in our class. Of course, we were young and daft, you know, just letting you know, it's too young for people to do. You know, to bear the responsibility of an examination like that, that could change the whole course of their lives. In them days, it did. Later on, my sons and daughters and all them, they all passed it and they all went to grammar schools. Of course, I have a son that passed it and he went to Newcastle University and he was there 7 years. I had three children going to grammar school at the same time, but I never went. And I hadn't the sense to go, so I might as well tell you the truth. No, out of the inclination, so to be quite fair, I wonder many a time how my son takes after, to be quite fair. Because I never had the inclination, not in them days. I couldn't do the same as what he did. He used to come in and go in the drawing room, we had a sitting room up there, when we had a big house. He used to go and sit in the sitting room and get all his books and that out and study and study and study. And there's one thing he didn't like to be beat at nothing, you see. Well, in that respect, it's maybe like me. I didn't like to be beat with nothing, but I wouldn't sit and study like that.
Did you feel that you really wanted to get through work, help the family income?
Exactly. That was it. That was the top and bottom of everything. See, people could rarely make a afford for you to go because you had to have the only farmers, you know. And I'll be quite frank with you. When I was Pastor Gord Grammar School, I had three going at the same time. The wife then thought it was time for her to start work, you know. Because every year you had to go up the Manor Castle to the school, to this shop, and he specialised in the yoni farms, and you couldn't get them no else. They had the monopoly on the... it used to cost us our holiday money every year, easy and a bit more, you know. But I used to get so much off my pay, and she did. For our holidays, it was for our holidays at first, you know, to go to Scarborough somewhere for a week. But we never got no holidays, you know, and... it was all to buy them clothes, and every year they wanted a different size, and you know, and then one would get on the cricket team, and he wanted white flannel, and that, and then the wife was working, and I was working, and we were more or less working just to put them through. But kind of grumbled about the young ones, like, you know, they did well, did very well, they are right.
Did you get annual holidays and went away when you were a child?
No. The farthest I ever got in them days when we were young was Seton Carew. And we sometimes went to the Salvation Army trip, which was one of the few organisations in West Orton that had trips. See? Later on, I once went with the choir trip with the local church. And that was the farthest I'd ever been, was the Lake District. And I remember I came back and my dad said, did you enjoy it? I said, I've been abroad. I was up on a boat and I went over this water. And I thought I'd been abroad, you know, sort of stars. And I was only young, like 11 or 12. The St. Carew was about the farthest, maybe all year we'd get the red car, you know, for a change. That was it. When I joined the army, I'd never been no further. I'd been to the Lake District once, and that was the furthest I'd ever been, the farthest away from home I'd ever been, you know.
Were you a church-going family?
No.
Or chapel?
I went to church. I was in the choir maybe a year.
Did you get to the boys' brigade or the boys' scouts?
No. We had no organised. There was a church lad brigade before we went in, but he faded away, you know. No, there was no... organised, you know, there was no organised recreation, like, they had a church lads brigade, they were still up with West Arden, the army used it during the war, but it never functioned well, and it faded away, sort of style, you know, and the nearest scouts, I believe, was at Eamwood, which was 3 or 4 mile walk, if you wanted to go there, and we went in Clyde and walk that far, you know, not join the scouts. Although, you know, in hindsight, looking back, I would say it was a good thing if we'd had that type of thing. But, you know, you've just got, when you're born, you've got to take the conditions that's there. And there was no conditions in West Orton. That's the worst part I've ever had about the village. You know, they've never been inclined. For the period of time between them, youths of 14 or 11 up to 18, they should have things like that. They should have boys' brigades and they should have scouts for people that's interested. And there's part of my family shifted down to Somerset. And my youngest grandson is only about 11, 12 or somewhere like that. A big, fine fella he is. And he's straight away in the Boy Scouts. He goes camping with them and he's over the moon with it. Say, well, if he'd stayed up here, he wouldn't have gotten that opportunity. That it doesn't occur up here. They're not scout minded around this part of the area. Never have been, not in my time, that.
You said that you left school at 14.
Yes.
Did you get into work straight away?
Yes, oh yes.
Where did you start?
At first, I started with my father at the Brodie. Them days in the Brodie, in the bottling department, that where I started, it was all girls, all women. And all big, strong women used to touch them. And in them days, I had a fancying for this cider, you know, there's little bottles of cider. Getting the cider, they call it. And this, I'm going back a long time here, maybe 60 years. I don't know. I think they're maybe still going now. And I used to love them. Oh, I used to. And you know, at allowance time, the girls break off, you know, for a drink of lemonade or whatever. I used to sneak around the corner and get a bottle of this out the back. I shouldn't have done it, you know, it wasn't. And then I start taking tow, you know, and I, anyway, my father cast in to give us a good talking to and this and that and to this. So I walked out of Duff, and next day I says, I'm not going. And then made him fell out. And he says, would you rather go on the farm? And see, the brother had about a 300-acre farm. And I said, yes, I prefer farming to this, working with women. Like I said, I don't like it here. I'd rather go on the farm. So I went on the farm. And no, I really enjoyed that for about a year. And all my mates worked at the local colliery, which was at Avonwood, Randolph Colliery. It's just lately closed, you know, it's last 5 or 6 years. And they were telling us, you know, about these times they had a pit. And of course, they had more money than what I had working on the farm. I believe I only had about 7 and 6 pence a week, you know. Didn't get much pocket money them days. Any road. Get yourself up and get a start. So I tried this pit job, you know. I said, I'll go and have a look at this pit job. And I started that local colliery up there. Where sometimes they'd be gentle with you and start your own bunk, what they call the top of the, on the surface, till you more or less got your eyesight sort of style. And then you'd go down pit. Well, I was champion working at bunk, but as soon as I went down pit, I really had no fancy for it.